Hi, welcome to another episode of Startup Health Now, the weekly show celebrating the healthcare transformers and changemakers reimagining healthcare. My name is Stephen Krein, and today we're at the Wearable Tech and Digital Health Conference in New York City, organized by ApplySci, and we're sitting down with Dr. Nathan Intrator, a professor and a successful entrepreneur from Tel Aviv University. This is going to be a great episode.
It is the duty of leaders to lead, of the creative to create, of the daring to do. The free world expects leadership of us. Its fate and our fate depends upon our leadership. We are industrious, inventive, restless, with the fires that burn within us. Well, I say that nothing is easy, and the best things are the hardest. And all our troubles, all our immense difficulties, now and in the future, can I say, be solved if we have the will, the courage. The future is to those who take it.
Welcome back to Startup Health Now. We're sitting down with Dr. Nathan Intrator, a professor and an entrepreneur who is with us at the Wearable Health and Tech Conference here in New York City. Thanks for sitting down with us today.
Sure, my pleasure.
So I want to step back because you've got a great background, both as an educator and a serial entrepreneur, and you're back at it again, building another company. But who is Nathan?
Well, I'm interested in the brain. This is really what I've been interested in the last 20 years, 25 years. Everything else is kind of coming out of that. I built expertise in signal processing and machine learning, which I've been using for about 15 years to understand how the brain works. And lately I've been using to actually develop new technologies to analyze the brain better.
And so that's the common theme in everything you've done. What was the first entrepreneurial venture that you did get involved in?
The first entrepreneurial venture was related to asthma. I have asthma in my family, and after a while I realized that it's a little bit of signal processing to understand what's going on and to decide whether to administer medications or not. I started my own asthma company. Then I realized that a guy in Israel started a company and had many patents on that. So I joined him and we started something together. The second one had to do with ultrasound or with sonar, where we were able to improve sonar resolution. That was a company that was started in the States. The asthma company is actually a public company still alive.
And what's your favorite part or favorite stage of a company, having built something from scratch now?
My favorite stage is when people said it's impossible to do, where I see the solution very clearly. And then when they change their look on their face when they see that it works.
Right. So you've been studying the brain for a long time, been obsessed with it, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Tools, now looking back 20, 25 years, were the tools rudimentary compared to today? And I want to get a little bit of context for what the world was like 20 or 25 years ago with what you had at your disposal to transition into a little bit of where we are today.
Well, I mean, the bad news is that we haven't progressed really much. We've done a lot of research, a lot of papers were published, but in fact, if we go back 70 years ago when Hubel and Wiesel started, and those in the mid-40s that really started this field, we did not progress much from there. They tried to define what the synaptic rule, the change in a single synapse is. There were few Nobel Prize winners as a result of that, but still scientists do not agree on what a single synapse in a single neuron is doing in the brain. So we haven't really progressed on that. However, on the whole, using functional MRI, we did progress understanding more functional networks in the brain, connectivity between networks, etc.
So do you think, with the context for that over the last 25 years, does the next 25 years look different? Do we make more progress than we made over the last 25 years?
I believe so. I believe sensors are getting better and smaller, and they will enter the brain more than before. And electronics is getting more sensitive, so even if the sensors do not get inside the brain, it's going to be possible to measure outside of the brain more activity. We are understanding functional MRI. We are understanding all sorts of things that can be done with MRI, which is magnetic resonance, with MEG, which is also magnetic encephalograph, and with EEG, which is really what I'm trying to develop. Signal processing is finally entering into the field, and I believe that it will move the field forward.
Did you think we would be further along when you got, even you look back and you think about where we would be in 2015?
I actually thought we would have been, we would be much further than where we are, yes.
Okay. So you're doing a new business, a new startup, using obviously almost everything you've done up until now as practice for what you're going to do. Tell us a little bit about Neurosteer and the new business that you've
So I understood created. That we are not really monitoring the brain, our most important organ. We are not monitoring it, and we are administering medications without really knowing if they are needed or not.
Be specific when you say not monitoring. I want to go back to that.
I'll explain that. So, for example, I spoke with a young child who said, I haven't had an epilepsy seizure for the last year, but I'm still taking my medication every day. This is really an indication that maybe he doesn't need to take his medication. And if there was a way to monitor and see if there's any still abnormality in his brain which requires the medication, good, but maybe not. This is an example, okay? We are not monitoring mood. We are not monitoring attention. We are looking at people. We are trying to talk to them. We're trying to assess their brain condition.
At moments in time, but not continuously.
Well, not continuously and not objectively, okay? When a person comes to the hospital and says, maybe I had a heart attack, he would do an enzyme test to decide if there's a damage to the muscle or not. There's nothing like that to the brain.
So what is Neurosteer going to do to change that?
So Neurosteer is developing a portable, mobile, and very easy-to-use EEG based on only two electrodes. And with only two electrodes, he's trying to extract a very large amount of information of brain activity, of brain states, and enable monitoring, if needed, all the time.
And this is going to be what kind of a hat, a patch? Or
it will be a patch, a little patch on the forehead that hopefully within a couple of years will be see-through and very easy to put. We'll talk with your phone, which will load the data to the cloud, and from there be analyzed and via a simple API information, high-level information about what's going on in the brain will be sent to whoever needs it.
So what does the world look like 5 or 10 years from now when Neurosteer is out in the market and everyone's using it?
Well, the idea of monitoring is only half of the story because the brain is very elastic, plastic, and can be modified even at every age. And the whole idea of monitoring is actually administering some kind of treatment, some kind of neural feedback, which will then alter the brain and bring it to a better state. So my hope is that there's going to be less usage of medications and better feedback, which will alter the brain. That feedback is going to be done via computer games or fun things. It's not going to be something that will look like a medical treatment.
So when you think about what you're going to do this time, perhaps differently than you did last time, is there anything that comes to mind that now that you've done this before that you're going to make sure you do with this startup?
Well, medical taking the medical path is very painful, very difficult for various reasons. And fortunately now with this kind of monitoring or this kind of science, it is possible to go in that gray area of the lifestyle and not fully medical. We will take that lifestyle gray area path for as long as we can until we build a lot of information that will enable us to persuade whoever needs to be persuaded, which is first, of course, the FDA, but then the insurance companies and the medical community, that we have something very, very powerful that they need to use.
So could this Could this company have existed 5 years ago or 10 years ago?
I don't think so. The sensor industry has actually improved. Electronics went down. So what is being sold now as an instrumentation amplifier for $1 used to be a huge box, which was very expensive several years ago. A to Ds were more expensive. Of course, Bluetooth communication did not exist. So none of that really existed. And I'm not talking about the sensors, which can now be woven into textile and so forth.
Do you think this becomes, for you, your full-time kind of focus, or do you continue teaching and doing other things while building this business?
I see myself devoting the next 3 years full-time for the company and then getting it to go more into the marketing path, hopefully reducing the technological risk to the point where it's rolling on its own, and then just steering it a little bit as needed.
Gotcha. And so you're taking, you were teaching full time at Tel Aviv University. Mm-hmm. You're going to take some time off from doing that?
Exactly.
And from your perspective, what else do you need to do? Who else do you need to bring onto your team to kind of round out what you focus on versus what some of the other folks need to focus on to make this work?
Well, we have the technology. What we need is real good business development that we're going to bring right at the beginning, because approaching the market is non-trivial, it's very sophisticated, and I would like to bring someone who is as knowledgeable in business development as I am knowledgeable in signal processing. I don't have that knowledge. I do it every once in a while if I have to, but I really am not good at it.
You play one on TV. Are you going to do this from here, or from the States, or from Israel?
It will be done from both.
From both. Technology in Israel and business here?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. There's incredible technologies and technologists in Israel. From a commercialization standpoint and some of the business standpoint, obviously, the best of both worlds, kind of bridging both. Were your other businesses also both in Israel and the U.S.?
So the Asma business was actually in Tel Aviv and in Australia, in Melbourne, because Asma in Australia is very high, so the investors came from Australia. But it makes sense to develop and to do the clinical studies in Israel. Clinical studies in Israel can be used for FDA approval here.
So what were you teaching in Tel Aviv? What are you teaching at Tel Aviv University?
Computer science.
Computer science. And are you seeing...
And neural computation.
And are you seeing a difference in the students? Have you seen a difference in the students over the last 5, 10, 15, 20 years in terms of their penchant for entrepreneurship or getting involved with startups? And kind of how do you think the students themselves have changed over the time you've been there?
I see amazing students. I really see amazing students. We were just in a hackathon for high schoolers and very young students. There were kids 17 years old who had 7 years of experience. You know, really amazing. And you could see them performing, and you could see that they really know exactly what they're doing. So I'm actually excited about this young generation. They were exposed much more than, a generation ago. And those who are very curious can really take it very, very far.
So you spent the day at the Wearable Tech and Digital Health Conference here. What did you see that you didn't know before you walked in here this morning?
Well, I'm following MC10, for example, for the last 2.5 years. I feel that they have amazing technology, and I really wanted to bring them here. There was more technology of that caliber, that technology which analyzes sweat in a very sophisticated way. So there were some technology. The panel about investment was very interesting. I definitely learned something.
Biggest insight as you kind of wrap up the day, and we just finished, you know, your panel and your presentation, but love to hear your thoughts as you kind of end the day.
I believe that this is a very good time to get into this field. There's a very big interest in this wearable technology. The brain is receiving more and more attention. People understand that, yes, we know, we understand the kidneys, we understand the heart, we understand the glucose to a point where we can really manage those diseases. But we are very far on trying to help the brain. The problem of attention deficit and whatnot is actually just growing. And so this is really ripe time to do it, technology-wise and market-wise.
All right. So when we come back to this conference in 2020, what's changed?
I believe that a lot of people will be connected, just like they are connected now to their phone. I don't want to say to their computer because that's really passé, but mm-hmm. connected to their phone. A lot of people will be connected through their brain to the internet for various reasons, really for very different reasons.
You think in 5 years?
Maybe 5, maybe 10 years.
Okay.
In 5 years, it will be the early adapters, which will be more of people with some kind of disabilities, kind of, some kind of brain disorders, yes.
And 10 years, definitely.
Yeah.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that we shall be able to read everything about the brain. That doesn't mean that we shall know everything that's happening there. But we will know much about brain states and be able to then manage various things and actually manage our brain more efficiently.
Do you, so you think early adopters, those with chronic diseases, with brain injury, kind of getting in first.
Yeah.
10, 15, 20 years, how has this, does it go invisible and just inside and implanted? Or where do you think this all plays out really longer term?
I'm hoping that in 20 years, we'll understand the brain better. We will have machines that will have real intelligence, not just being able to learn from past facts and build a model, but really build intelligence and have the deduction capabilities that humans have, or brains, not just humans, but animals. And that those machines will actually be used to help the brain function better as opposed to replace the brain. And I believe that there's a lot of room for brain-computer interface to improve, enhance the brain for healthy people and definitely for those with disabilities.
All right. So we're going to turn to personal for a few minutes. What do you do for fun?
I like to do sports. I like to run. I used to do karate, martial arts. I like to listen to classical music. This is kind of cools me down the most. I like to stroll in New York, walk on the river. This is always fun for me.
I know, beautiful view where we are, yeah. Where we are right now. And what are you reading right now? What book?
Well, that's actually a book in Hebrew, so I don't think that is going to help you. Well, maybe it's being translated already. This is a historian that is producing amazing perspective about the future based on history.
What's the book called?
Well, it's called The World of Yesterday, or something. I'm translating from Hebrew, but I'm sure it will be translated.
We'll see if we can get a link and put it on the on the podcast link.
I'm not sure if this is the best translation, but something like that.
Who's had the biggest influence on you in your life?
Well, I was very fortunate to do my PhD with a person who got his Nobel Prize on his PhD thesis, which is really not something that happens often. I met him when he switched from physics, or from regular physics, into trying to understand the brain. And his insight, with an amazing background in physics, was very influential. I learned how to deduct, how to perform analysis of facts in a very nice way, and how to be relaxed and enjoy life at the same time. He was one influencer. My father was definitely...
What was his name?
A strong... Leon Cooper, yeah. From Providence, from Brown University. He received his Nobel Prize on what's called superconductivity, Cooper pairs, with Baradin and Shockley, who were the only ones who got two Nobel Prizes in physics. They invented the transistor. So I was really fortunate to be there with him. My father definitely influenced my life. He was a very hard worker who understood that you can be bright, but you need also to work very hard. Never complained. I learned a lot from him.
That's fantastic. So, wrap-up question. We call the entrepreneurs who are transforming healthcare transformers. If you could have one superpower, what would it be as a healthcare transformer?
Really help us function with our brain at a much, much higher level for those who feel that they cannot function, they cannot concentrate, they cannot think clearly. They are very strongly affected by their emotions, like trauma people really cannot think clearly. Really help us with that so that we should be more relaxed on one hand and much more productive.
And if you could have one superpower, what would it be?
I'd like to help the world. It would be something that will really...
Seems like you're already doing that.
That will be something that will really leave this world better after I leave. That's all I want.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for spending time, and it was a long day, but really appreciate it. Look forward to seeing Norsteer come alive and make a change and really make that impact on the world that you're talking about.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Take care.